the word art, artist and creative is such a gatekeeping word. The more work you put in, right, after a while it starts to become tedious. And the last thing you want is to you hating the thing that you love so much.
Yeah.
A creative person will get bored very quickly. And when I say a creative person, that could be anybody. And the moment you get bored, you'll figure out, okay, how do I not get bored? Okay, let me set myself up for a challenge. When I'm set to fail, and then let me overcome that challenge. Once you overcome the challenge and you taste success, you get a kick, yeah, right? Yeah. So, and now that becomes your new normal. And then now you go to the next, you set yourself up to the next challenge. And the chase is half the fun.
Hey guys, and welcome back to the show. This week's episode features Sahith Anand, who's the founder, creator, and filmmaker at Do Creative Labs. He's most known for creating a lot of Jod Indians videos, a lot of advertisements that you might have seen, and also he's currently working as the cinematographer for One Cut, Two Cut, I think the movie featuring Danish Seth. So yeah, that'll be out soon, so stay tuned for that. So I've been working with Danny and Sahith for a while now to get him on the show, and finally, after a couple of months, we're able to make this happen. And you know what? The episode truly lives up to its mark. In this episode, we talk about the importance of defining and finding the soul in your work, knowing when to not stop and quit, and finally, creating a figurative museum for all your works, so that way there's a bare minimum threshold in terms of quality, and in a way that you always one-up your previous works. If you like the intro, you like where this is going, and if you've seen some of Sahith's work, I mean, of course, who are we kidding, right? You have obviously seen some of Jod Indian's videos. So consider smashing that like button and showing the YouTube algorithm what's up. If you are listening to this over audio, then consider dropping me a DM on Instagram with your thoughts. I'd love to hear from you. Cool, let's get right into the episode. This is episode 33 with Sahith Anand. Dude, I'm super glad that you're finally here. It's been
same here.
I think we've worked on this for months. I've been working with your wife, Danny, for so long. But I think we were talking right prior to the shoot as well. You were like one of our first prospective guests, which is just crazy. And finally, we're able to make it happen. And that too, we have gone from not having any episodes to now having 30 odd episodes and moved locations, and finally it's come back and we're finally here, which is great.
Normal stuff. Seriously, yeah, 30 episodes, that's really good.
Yeah, even I can't believe it now, when I think about it, right?
When did you start?
I think we started publishing in July or August.
Okay.
So we've been consistent and stuck with one episode per week.
Okay, and so what like prompted you to just get into this in the first place? Were you always like listening to a lot of podcasts?
Not as much as other podcast consumers would, but some of these guys really, really, you know, like struck a chord with me.
Okay.
And I think we were talking about this too, where all these guys who have the right message or the right kind of content, there's no boundary in terms of geography or, you know, location. I think you tune in and you relate on a different level.
Right.
And I did. It helped me, you know, start my own company. It helped me do what I'm doing right now. And I realized that maybe we don't have someone in India who's doing something like this.
Right.
And especially bringing it down to, you know, like I keep telling you, relatability. And, you know, it all goes back to that. So I decided, you know what, I'll just try it. And we thought about creating just an audio podcast. And then I was like, audio sounds okay, but let's try something different. And then I went in with video, and then the whole thing, like the work just exponentially shot up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, damn, I shouldn't have signed up for this. Now I'm part of the rabbit hole. So I'm doing this on a week on week basis.
But I'm sure this is fun, because, you know, I meet a lot of people who say we want to start a podcast.
Yeah.
because they're inspired by the stuff they hear, including myself. So, but it never happens. It's one of those, like, I want to write a book.
Yeah.
But it never happens. So it's always nice to meet someone who's not just started, but has 30 episodes in. That's phenomenal, actually.
When I say it, sinks in. Slowly, like, coming back to me. I'm like, shit, 30 episodes. It's crazy. But, yeah, dude. So, I'm super glad you're here.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm here as well.
There's just so many things we can talk about. I think we spoke about so many things. Actually, I jokingly said it, but I actually meant it. I should have just recorded the damn conversation that day.
I think we spoke for an hour and a half on the phone where you're just telling me what we're going to talk about.
It started there.
Yeah.
And then we just went, you know, literally at it, which is just awesome. And I've noted down a lot of things. And I think not just how I was able to relate to what you were saying, I think our viewers and listeners too will really have a lot to, you know, understand and take away from this. But what I wanted to start off with was talking about how you said you're now running into a lot of people who are, you know, doing this, which is maybe, you know, leading a life filled with purpose, meaning, or looking for their passions and all of that. Any particular reason why you think that's happening now?
I think what's happening, and I'm meeting a lot of people who are young who's doing that, not just who have gone through the cycles of going through a job, then getting pissed off at the job, and then quitting the job.
Yeah.
Usually that's the usual trope.
Yeah.
You know, people join a company, they realize they want to do something else in life, and then they try something else by now they don't have parents forcing them to do stuff and all that. But now I think more young people are directly going into that zone where, you know what, I'm not going to join a job just because I need money to think. Because what's happened is self-publishing has sort of opened up huge avenues. You make a video, you can put it up on YouTube, and you can potentially be the next MKBHD, or you can potentially be the next top unboxer or whatever. And it's so low effort that you can do it. You can start. The entry towards, that gatekeeping thing is gone.
Yeah. The barrier of entry.
Yeah, the barrier of entry is so small that you think, and which actually now then puts things into perspective, where if you always wanted to do it and if you haven't done it, then you don't want to do it. Because the barrier to entry is so little, you're just lazy then.
That's the thing.
So because of that, I'm meeting a lot of people who are like saying, you know, I'm not going to join a job. You know, I know editing, so I'm going to edit for a lot of people. Or I know how to make enough videos about poems.
Yeah.
People who are writing poems and publishing. Anand, who's my business partner, his wife writes poems. So she recorded it, went to a studio, recorded it, and now she's releasing it. She's planning on releasing it as a Spotify track.
Wow.
Right? Wow. So I'm like, can you imagine, like, even 5 years back, this somebody releasing poems on the internet as part of a SoundCloud or Spotify would have been unheard of.
Yeah.
Or you have to be up there.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be really a poet.
Yeah.
Wear a canvas bag and walk around in sandals. Only then do you think of
those poets, the canvas poets.
Those, the canvas, the canvas bag and the sandals poets.
The kurta.
The kurta and all that. That's a typical depiction in all the films. That guy's an artist. I'm meeting a lot of people who want to just, I wouldn't use the word dabble, because dabbling means you want to see if it works or not. These people are like, no, I'm going to make it work.
In it for good.
In it for good.
Yeah.
And none of them are like doing it by quitting the day jobs.
Yeah.
You know, they're getting a job and, you know, that is helping feed whatever, but they once they decide that, hey, I might be pretty good at photography, then they're figuring out what to do with the photography. You put it on Instagram, you get a couple of likes, but then there's this new mindset that I want to go to the next level. So they're trying different things, they're taking risks, that thing. And that's another beautiful part of this whole thing, is that there's no, punishment for failure. You put something on Instagram, it gets 5 likes.
Yeah.
You expected 50. fine, no problem. You move on, go take the next this thing. This, yeah. So that punishment of failure is not there, which is even more better for anyone who wants to create. And I think that's really, really, I'm looking at a lot of young people. I can't believe I'm saying young people because let's face it, I'm old. But, you know, I'm seeing a lot of people who are 21, 22, doing some amazing work. I mean, we have a couple of people working with us. They honestly, we give them a hard time. Okay. But I keep telling, you know, Danny and all that what they are doing at their age, we were bumbling idiots.
Yeah.
They're doing phenomenal work. Yeah, okay. They're actually pulling their weight as much as us.
Yeah. And right
they
now.
Yeah. They expected, they're not seen as young people and juniors, and there's no such thing that exists, at least within the company and within the projects that we work.
Right.
Yeah. So they're supposed to, they're expected to pull their weight.
Yeah.
You know, and hit at the same level that everyone else is hitting. So then they're 22, 23 years old. I think the youngest one we have is 21. Yeah. And they're phenomenal work. Like, I can't tell you the kind of work that these people are doing. And when I think back how we were at 21, I honestly was a bumbling idiot. I just finished engineering and I wanted to do an MBA. And I was like, I mean, I was such an idiot at their age. But they're doing such phenomenal work. It's very promising what's happening right now. And which is why we are sort of like very encouraged by what's happening.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. that these people are taking charge and things like that. Like I was telling you on the phone, right? Everybody like sort of looks at this TikTok and self-publishing and influencer and Insta Reels as this negative thing, which, you know, once anything is adopted to a mass level, some negative aspects will be
criticism
there.
Bound to follow, right?
Yeah, but I think there's a bigger, more positive side effect to these things. It's giving a lot of people confidence to do a lot of things. And it is, I know there's self-worth they measure in terms of likes and views and all that. I know that's a bad thing. Okay. But it is also giving a lot of people confidence to publish, go out on their own and, you know, make their own stuff, put it out there, try different things and all that. And I think that is something that we need to realize. I know TikTok is bad, which is sad.
But yeah.
But I think this it had a lot of positive things. And people pitted YouTube against TikTok and all that. I mean, everything is a medium in the end of the day.
Right.
And people are just putting stuff out and things like that. If you don't like it, don't watch it. That's my philosophy. But yeah, so I think that's why I'm meeting a lot of people who are like, who was in the same zone, going on their own, self-publishing and things like that. So, I mean, sure. Look, I mean, your podcast, you didn't have to take permission from anybody to publish this, right? And initially when you started, I'm sure you didn't think that I want a million views tomorrow. You know, it's all like you're having fun.
Yeah.
And the fact that the more fun you have, and after maybe three episodes, you'll be like, okay, we need to like up the ante a little bit. So you start putting in production and things like that.
Yeah.
So it'll grow. Yeah. And I think a lot of people are understanding that. And that's why I think I'm meeting a lot of people, but I could be wrong. I don't know what the thing is.
Are you seeing a lot of these guys specifically in the content space itself?
Mostly in the content, because see, my world is mostly people within that kind of a space. I really don't, first of all, I'm not much of a people person, as in I don't go and hang out and do parties and things like that. So whenever I meet mostly because of work. Either we are looking at people to hire for the next project or working with the people in the current project. So when we do that, I think I'm meeting a lot of people who are like, who used to be working somewhere else. Now suddenly they're stylists or makeup artists and they're all doing some crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of, you know how we find all these people? We find these people not only because they send us their stuff and say, hey, can I just work with you for the next project? But I think most of these people we find because the four of us, we browse Instagram a lot and we bookmark stuff we like. And next time we have a project, we like, hey, I saw this person who did this really good makeup. let's just contact that person to get on our plane. We talk to them and we get them on. And then we see they, and the reason we found them is because they self-published.
Right, right.
And that might not be their commercial work. It's their personal work.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so a lot of actors, they take movies and they do...
Reenact it.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it might be bad.
Yeah.
But it the spirit of it comes through.
Correct.
You know, that you're willing to put yourself out there to do work.
Right.
And usually we pick people because of that spirit. Because in the end, what happens is, no matter how good or bad they are, once they're in the project, we sort of bend them to what we want. And that's just the realities of a project, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's stylists or art directors or whatever it is, like, we have a very specific way of doing things and a vision of doing things. So they need to cater to that.
Right.
But it's that spirit that we usually hire people for. Because usually what happens is, people come thinking they're big shots.
Yeah.
We tell them, no, we want it exactly like this. We want the wall color to be exactly this color, because the shirt color that he's wearing is going to be this color.
Right.
And the lighting is this temperature. So you need... because
you're putting thought from all aspects.
Yeah. We've already sort of built the blueprint for what we want in every frame or in the film that we are doing. So when I wouldn't say experienced people, when people who have worked for too long in this industry, they get comfortable with the fact of not taking orders. And they usually come with a certain amount of weight, which doesn't work for us. But when I see even then, there are people with that spirit. That spirit is alive even after 20 years of being in that industry. Yeah,
yeah. And you can definitely see that.
You can definitely see it. When I work with, when we are hiring for another project, it only takes a meeting for me to understand whether I'm working with that person or not.
Right,
working with that
right,
person. It's just instant.
Yeah.
You can catch that spirit immediately. Because sometimes you might not even talk about that project. It's talking about something completely different. Have you seen this? Did you see this movie? Oh, I love that movie. Or I hate that movie.
Yeah.
It might not even be agree about that movie, but it'll be about, you know, the passion of talking about that movie. And then we'll immediately work. I don't even know what the work is like. But I know that with his spirit, sure, there might be hiccups, but he or she will be that kind of a person who will not give up.
Right.
Who will say, you know what, I'm going to figure this out. You don't worry about it. We'll figure this out.
Right.
Because we're all making a film in the end of the day. And that's what we're serving.
We have spoken about this on the show multiple times before too. And something I talked to my team, as well, we're slowly forming and building teams around our podcast as well. It's that the passion or the reason why you're doing this, right? Maybe one of the previous guests spoke about how it's so important for you to know the why. Right. Why are you doing this?
Right?
Because when shit hits the fan, right, you should be up and ready to do whatever it is.
Right.
Like you said, you guys probably have a different scope or a different perspective altogether. And at the end of the day, it comes down to, it's all very subjective.
Right.
But because you guys are putting together a team, I think it's a team effort. And you guys have to mold and kind of fit into that, you know, that narrative itself. So if you don't have that drive or that spirit, so one hiccup and you're just like, I'm just not, you know, I can't see
I'm
me
in
working.
It for the money, screw it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Kind of a,
why do I care about, why am I putting in this effort? And that's just a very weird or sad way to look at things, right?
So when I'm working with the team, I think the young ones that we call.
Young ones.
The children of our company that we call them. So I keep talking to them about curating your work. Make a website, make a portfolio, whatever, and think of it as your personal museum, right?
Yeah.
So every work that you do, it should be worthy of putting it on a pedestal in that particular museum. And I tell that to them because that was told to me when I was in advertising. So I had people who gave me a very hard time being molded. And I had the tip. When I think back about it and I see these people, again, I was such an asshole because at that time I thought I knew everything.
Yeah.
You know, I know writing. I know how to write ad lines and headlines and all that. I mean, I don't need to know anything. But within a week or so of, there's a person called Vinod, Vinod Chandran, who sort of like, I would say literally beat it out of me. you know, the creative person inside me. I mean, because at that point, I thought I knew it. I knew enough to, because I was writing enough and I had gotten hired by him himself and all that. So, he used to do this thing where every work is a piece of art.
Yeah.
Right? But don't think of yourself as an artist. Right. You're there to solve a problem. But how interestingly you solve that problem is what it is. And take that work and curate your reel or your portfolio or whatever, and then see how it changes. So I tell these guys as well the same thing. So make sure you curate it. Because the moment you realize you have a museum for which this has to go into, you're very scared of doing shitty work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or shoddy, mediocre work. Because you're like, no, my last work was like this. This needs to be better than that. Otherwise, it's not a museum. It's a store.
Some kind of progression.
Yeah, it's a warehouse of the same work again and again.
Yeah.
That's when you'll start to like think about, okay, my last work, it was like this. How can I now push this to the next level so that it's worthy to be there as a separate work?
Yeah.
Not five works that looks the same
or
feels the same or whatever. Yeah. You know? So,
and also, who else do you have to blame in that situation but yourself, right? Because at the end of the day, it's your repository or it's your, you know, museum, right?
It's true. It's like the more work you put in, right? After a while, it starts to become tedious. And the last thing you want is to you hating the thing that you love so much. Okay. And it happens to a lot of things. And the only thing that to avoid doing that is to make sure that your next work has something in it that's worth, that you're basically doing it for the money, all that is different, but you're doing it so that it's worthy of that museum, your personal museum, so that you can put it there and say, this work is special because it's not like that.
Here
it could also be a personal achievement. It doesn't always have to be something everyone will notice. Like when I was shooting Jordan, initially we didn't shoot with any lights. And it looked like whatever it looked like. And then I think somewhere around last year, a year and a half back, I started learning lighting. And as a director, I never actually had to learn lighting. But I thought, you know, let me learn lighting, because otherwise it's going to be the same thing, Jordan. You know, the sketches are funny, but for me personally, how do I grow with whatever I'm doing, you know? So then I started learning lighting, and then I started lighting. It's not like anyone noticed. But for me, it was a personal growth, because I'm like, here, this film, I learned lighting and I can see the difference. I can see what it is. And then there started my journey about certain things.
Dude, no one notices a big fad, because I'm telling you, I definitely saw that difference. I mean, from the kind of content that you guys used to create prior to, I think, that juncture, after which I could really see you guys, you know, up your production. Because even, I think, you had these challenge videos that were shot recently, right? When I say recently, maybe a couple of months ago too.
How recent Jordan puts out their videos.
And I could see that you guys are shooting in different profiles, and there's like lighting, and there's like a backlight, and there's you know, you can see that depth difference. Because earlier it was just like a skit.
One of the things we were very scared when we were working with Jordan is we should not be slowing them down. That's, we're very, even now we sort of like, I feel like we internally feel slightly guilty. Are we slowing them down? I mean, aren't we enough, putting enough videos is slightly us to blame, because now we've gotten used to making sure the content look is on par with our previous, in terms of aesthetics, in terms of looks and all that, is on par with that. And a lot of people ask us, you know, is it worth putting all that this much money and thing to make it look like that? Because brands don't come with that expectation. They just say, give us a...
They look at the numbers
That's all they think. But for us, it's not there. For us, then, I mean, what isn't it for us? If it's just about numbers and things like that, then we could just be putting out one every week. That's how many we actually have. We have a load, at least 70 sketches, sort of like already planned and put and kept in place. But we don't want to do it just like that. We don't want to waste it by just putting it out just like that. We want to build a proper anthology of work that we're proud of. You know, there we did that differently. And there we, I think, the reason we started growing to the numbers that we're growing now is because of that kind of quality. It looks like somebody took some effort to, you know, to sort of
definitely
make it better.
Yeah, and I think what we spoke about earlier, where you're catering to not just the local audience, you guys have responses from around the world.
Yeah,
it's not just now India, right? That's crazy.
That's another thing that's hanging over our head. Okay, now you look at a sketch from US or Japan, and we watch all these stuff just to think. Their sketches are so freaking. They look like they look so good. Okay, and then so we want to put out something that is on par with the thing. I don't want people to think Indian sketches, the YouTube Indian sketches, to be any less when compared to their sketches. You look at some of the Spanish ones or the US ones, UK ones and all. They're like so well made and things like that and everything. I'm like, why should... I mean, I hate that sort of a tag on us. Yeah. You know, that it's that look that it's made cheaply kind of thing. So we are competing with them to show them that our country can do just as well as them. In fact, better. Okay, we are definitely going for better. We want to put people in US and UK to shame in terms of quality and things like that. But that comes at a cost of people over here saying, why are you putting so much? Why, where is the video coming out? Why isn't you, why are you slowing this down? Yeah. We used to shoot one entire sketch, 7 to 9 sketches in one day.
Wow.
When we started off. Now we take 3 to 4 days. 3 to 4 days. Just yesterday I was shooting the rest of the next sketch that's going to come out. That started 2 weeks back. Shooting of that thing. So we... And now we have a VFX team that makes crazy VFX. Like if you've seen the Netflix video. The Jordanian video we did for Netflix.
Yeah, yeah.
That was just bonkers VFX.
Yeah.
We went all in with VFX. Time travel and going to different places and all that. So... We are like, that's the next thing for us. You know, we shouldn't be like, nobody, I don't want anybody to, without context, if they don't know Jordanian, look at a Jordanian sketch and think that that's just a sketch. I feel like it should belong to maybe on an OTT platform or TV or something like that. Yeah. Because I want it to be deserving of that, this thing. So that's, thankfully, that vision is shared across by Nas and Beep and our producers and stuff like that. So, thankfully, that's working out for us.
Dude, that's crazy, man. Because this whole... All these things that you guys are doing, I think you... Especially Jordanian, it's something that's been a long-term partnership, right? Yeah. It's been... Do Creative that's been on board with whatever it is that they have said and vice versa too, right?
Right.
So whatever you guys bring to a table is one technical aspect of it. They're bringing the skit aspect of it.
Right.
And then I think now you guys are all working together and doing pretty much everything,
right?
Which is... And you can actually see that in the work. I think...
I'm really happy to know.
No,
because most
sure.
of the time we don't read the comments because we are like, you know, let's not figure out what's happening. Let's just do what's making us happy and thing. Because we used to get very worked up about the comments because we would put so much effort into thing and somebody would be like, boring. Okay. And I'm like, okay, I guess so.
Dislike you, asshole.
Let me find your house address and dox you. So I'm like, no, but we sort of refrain from reading the comments, but we do go through it and see if did something stick the way we wanted it to stick or not.
Yeah,
things like that. And you know, Beep and Nas are such, what can I say, experts at fine-tuning their performance. They know exactly, they'll do something, they'll play a scene out, they'll come back and tell, just watch this word. The whole comment section will be about this word. And it will be about that word. The whole comment section will be about that word. So that's how we've sort of evolved together.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, dude. So now let's actually talk about what you've been doing from a long, long time. Because this whole... Starting with why you're doing it, purpose, passion, like you said, is all great.
Right.
But at the end of the day, I think inherently it should be something that fulfills you. It's something that kind of makes you feel like you're doing well, relevant of money and all these other aspects, right? But I think from a young age, you've been like into experimenting things and, you know, like just trying out so many things and then playing. I think you spoke very heavily about gadgets.
Right.
And just... it's not entirely, I don't know if I'm framing this right, but it's not entirely about the art. It's a little more about
playing around with the instruments.
Yeah.
Right? And just like me, you were also an engineer. Right. And then you decided to go down even more of a conventional path and then took an MBA.
Yeah.
And then, like, you now, you know, I think you never worked as part of your, you know, your core MBA set. Can you say advertising, the work that you did was core?
No.
Not really.
It had
right?
nothing to do. I mean, it's so funny how I got even got the job when I think about it. So, yeah. The word art, artist and creative is such a gatekeeping word. What I really honestly feel that these words felt very reservative to people. You know what I'm saying? So I meet a people, and if that person say that guy is say a producer, and he's a creative, it immediately sets the precedent that that guy's not a creative.
Got it? Yeah.
You know, yeah. And I really think that's bullshit, because that word about being somebody being a creative, somebody being an artist, is somehow it just comes off as pretentious for me. And no matter how much, even though I am into that so much, I just still feel it's somewhat very gatekeepy kind of a word. And I really want to like sort of eliminate that. See, we always say good ideas come from anywhere, but we just say it.
Yeah.
We never, you know, the moment some guy who's not a director comes up with an idea, you immediately like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay, enough. Yeah, let the director do this.
I know.
So I always sort of tried to fight against that kind of a gatekeeping thing. So whenever somebody says, oh, you were always an artist, I was never an artist. I never thought to myself one day that I'll be an artist. And I'll like, you know, go sort of seeking this art or something like that. For me, the most important thing was I get to play with different gadgets. New cameras, computer, this thing and all that. I was in boarding school for my entire schooling was in boarding school.
Okay.
So when my dad got a computer, I pulled out my own teeth. In the thing. So that I could come home to see the computer. So because in my boarding school, we had everything except a dentist. Because if you fell sick, they would take care of you right there.
I like the thought that's gone into this.
Thankfully, that's a teeth that I grew back. At that time, I didn't know all those things. So I pulled out a teeth, sort of enough to shake it out things like that. So I came back to Bangalore, brand new compact Presario computer. We used like...
Damn, Presario,
That's like one of those two speakers attached and all that. So I always liked the idea of having gadgets. And the moment you get a gadget... You'll play games for a bit and then you'll start wondering what are the things that you can create with it. That's how at least my mind worked. Things you get a camera, you're like, what good is a camera to just hold? You want to shoot something with it and then make something off it.
Yeah.
And then you'll start accessorizing the camera by a leather strap because you just made something. And then you'll start trying to sell that, publish those things. You know, so for most people, the journey is similar. They start liking the camera and things. But for a fair amount of people, that camera finally didn't catch as dust. Your real life sort of catches up with you and, you know, you just sort of think.
Yeah.
I think if we can make an effort to not let go of why you bought that camera in the first place, the first time you bought that. I'm just talking about camera because it's the most common thing these days. Then I think you'll keep shooting. And you'll keep getting better. Now, there's also a time where you start shooting, you're looking at photos and things like that. And then you realize your stuff is not as good as the people on the thing. Which is even more an encouragement for you to constantly try to match it or better it or whatever. So that's how my journey is. My journey was never, I'm an artist and I'm going to make art.
Yeah.
It was never about creating art. It was about playing with stuff. I love toys.
Yeah.
I love playing with these toys.
Yeah.
It was always that thing. So... I'm always finding new stuff. And if you ask my producers also, I'm never satisfied with the camera that I have. The moment the purchase of a camera is justified, I'm already on my producer's back saying, can we buy that next camera? It's just released. It has this and this and this, which this camera does not have. So we end up buying the next camera, which is in itself starts pushing the production
value,
to the next level and things like that. Because now, once I buy the camera, I'm like suddenly very...
eager to shoot, right?
Not just eager. Because, see, I'm not buying with my money, right? I'm buying with the company's money, which is managed by Anand and Boris. Now, I'm very guilty about making them invest on something and it not paying back. So, that guilt now makes me, create stuff with this so that, okay, Anand, now it's justified. See, this camera bought this much money back into the company and things like that.
Yeah.
He's never questioned it, okay? But I always feel like I'm answerable to him.
Yeah.
So I have this producer who the moment I tell Anand or Boris, like, I need this thing very badly, I get it. I'm in one of those places now where anything I want, I can just ask. Honestly, like, there's no dearth of toys for me.
It's a very scary, vicious cycle that you mentioned. But if you think about it, it's a very efficient cycle in itself, right? I mean, you buy it and then you're like feeling guilty and then you go back and you're creating and then again, you're upping up.
Yeah, so that's why that is the reason why I'm not referring to myself as an artist. An artist will be like, you give me a pencil and a thing, I will make
that's art. Enough for life.
That's enough for me. I am not one of those guys. I need the next camera. I need the next
pencil. I need a pen pencil. And then I need a lead.
I need a thing. This pencil just does not go with this desk. I need to change the desk. So I'll be that kind of a guy. Okay. I'm always buying stuff from things. But I'm also justifying it with creating something using it to create stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's my thing. I'm not a thing. But I can go down the rabbit hole of a particular craft just like that. So suppose if I'm... I bought a camera, now I need to justify, and I'm seeing the same camera being used by a person, someone on the internet create this beautiful image, and I'm like, okay, how do I get that done? So then I start learning the craft because of the gadgets that I have. That's how I learned cinematography or how I learned direction. Because I'm like, okay, I need to justify that I have these things. So my journey is not, I think it'll be very similar to a lot of people who like gadgets. But it won't be the same as people who are always artists. I never know.
I get that. And you spoke about this whole gatekeeping or let's say just restricting someone to a particular, vertical or a particular, skill set.
Right.
When actually, if you think about it, no human is just has one single facet.
Yeah. Right?
There are so many aspects to it. And more often than not, a good producer is one who's creative, right? True. A good producer is one who can really bring a team together, which means indirectly you're the good leader too.
True.
So all these things are so key. But then I think we are always looking for those, those core values.
Right.
And giving that more value in the market as opposed to just thinking about, like you said, that the essence,
right,
the core of, like, where is he or she coming from? Where does he or she want to go? And then, based on that, see, can we work with him or her and see whether that's going to be beneficial? And you've seen, for instance, yourself, you started off as a, you used to write, copyright, literally, moved on to directing, happenstance. And then from there, you're doing cinematography as well.
Right.
Which is something you thought you'd never do because, like you just said, dude, a year and a half ago, you were just learning lighting, which is incredible, right?
Yeah.
But I think when you start putting yourself out there and you actually have a drive to do this, automatically all these other doors open up. And as long as you decide to take that step ahead, you're good, right?
See, I think anybody who's probably listening to this, if they're in a particular field and they feel like they need to be, how can they earn the tag of being a creative or an artist? You already are if you think it. That's already there. Now it's up to you. So I think as much as I want to tell people that the gates are open and think, the onus is on you to walk through those gates in the end of the day. It's just because somebody told you that you're not creative enough or something like that, it's up to you still to prove them wrong.
Yeah.
People will say these things, but it is up to you to, sort of like dismiss those things and like sort of still prove them wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the main thing people should remember about how it works.
Basically. Yeah, I think it all goes back to what we said earlier, which is just that barrier of entry is so bloody small, it's right?
Very low right now.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, really, right? Anyone yeah. can who has a phone can create content.
That's true.
And if you're talking technical aspects of even just creating content here, right? If you have a phone and you have good lighting, it's better you invest in lighting as opposed to you investing in a, you know, the next gadget or whatever to shoot.
True.
Because at the end of the day,
don't tell my producers that, but still.
Yeah, no, I won't, and I'm assuming he knows that. But anyway, no. Yeah. But if you think about it, that's ideally the route to take.
Right.
But there's also the other side of this whole gadget thing too, right? Where we get so caught up in wanting to just have this, and you know, a lot of these guys who just are either hoarding or you know, just like have to purchase it because they, you know, they just have that that feeling.
I mean, it takes all kinds, right, to make the world. So there are people like that, and there are people who'll just like buy because they have the money, or either they're bored in life and they buy a lot of stuff.
FOMO.
It's just like, oh, that guy has the latest camera. Yeah. I need to buy that camera. See, you know what? Most cameras sell not because of the photos it takes, because of how it looks. Yeah. I'm telling you, like,
and also the brand value it carries and all that.
The brand value it carries and things like that. Okay, so like if you look at their like if you see a new camera being launched, I'm talking about like let's say a Fuji or a Canon or whatever, while they're things will have what the images look like and this thing and all that. The most thing they advertise is what? The body of the camera, right? Which is why I think that shot on an iPhone, the entire campaign is so brilliant, because they didn't show the phone in that campaign. They showed the photos that was actually taken in the campaign. That was marketed to a completely different people. So there are all kinds of people, you know, and things like that. And we have to be accepting of all of them.
Yeah.
Fine. I mean, that's what makes you happy at the end of the day. Fine. It shouldn't be an issue that you should not be buying that camera because you're not using it to your fullest. Use it however you want it. But if there are people who want to take it to the next level, then this works for them as well.
For sure. And I think the moment you become complacent, it's just that's where you've lost the battle. Right?
Yeah.
Because irrelevant of if you have just one piece of equipment or you have the entire, you know, the set, if you're just like, how's it going to change? The settings are still the same in this cam. I've got it. Right. I don't need it. I can just use this and I'm good to go. And
see, I think now that is where I would figure out if you're a creative or not.
Right.
Right. Because a creative person will get bored very quickly. Okay. And when I say a creative person, that could be anybody.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about that person who's creative. I'm talking about everybody who can be creative.
We are like wired for novelty, right? If you think
so,
about it.
Exactly. Yeah. So you'll get bored very immediately. And the moment you get bored, you'll figure out, okay, how do I not get bored? Okay, let me set myself up for a challenge where I'm set to fail. And then let me overcome that challenge. So then that gives you a bit of, once you overcome the challenge and you've taste success, that gives you a bit of an endorphin.
Yeah, rush. The dopamine.
Okay, oh, sorry, dopamine.
Yeah.
I said endorphin. Okay. I think it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
You get a kick.
You get a kick, right? Yeah. So, and now that becomes your new normal.
Yeah.
And then now you go to the next, you set yourself up to the next challenge. And then you start to chase it and thing. And just chase, it's half the fun. Yeah. Right? And then you sort of overcome it. And most people, what happens, the people sort of you mentioned who sort of buy cameras and then sort of it collects dust and all that is people who are very disheartened by the first sense of failure. For me, that's the biggest joy ever. The moment you fail, you're like, yes, now let me see how I can overcome this.
Because there's only one way up, right? That's it.
That's it. So a lot of people, when you are sort of conditioned to own you're only good at it if you succeed at it, is a notion that a lot of people have. And when they fail at it maybe 2-3 times and they see others are doing way better, exceptionally well compared to you, they get disheartened and then that's when they stop. Yeah. I think if you just don't stop there and you just say, okay, for me, my challenge is not to beat that guy. My challenge is to beat my
previous that photo, okay, how do I make that better? And study your previous work to see how it is bad, good. How can I improve it? How can I see the other people's? How can I match someone who's slightly better than me?
Yeah.
So that's how you sort of, I mean, the life goes on in a cycle because of that.
Yeah.
So that's sort of how it, how you keep yourself creative rather than just it dying somehow.
Yeah. And I think another important thing about the creative aspect is what we spoke about that night too, which is, all these technical gimmicks are great, but at the end of the day, the core is what you're trying to convey, right? What you're trying to put out there. If you kind of lack that itself, all these other things are just gimmicks at the end of the day. It doesn't matter.
Which is what sort of we have this saying called the soul, right? What is the soul of something? When you create, suppose you're creating a, let's say a small video of two people talking. What is the soul of it, right? What are these people talking about? How once you sort of define that, so it's very hard for me to actually tell in words what this is. In fact, it was very hard for me to grasp for the longest time. I would say I have clarity, 50% clarity on it only about a year and a half, 2 years back, where my journey has sort of led me to figure out, oh, you know what? Everything we create needs to have this soul. So, okay, let me try to define it as much as possible. Now, I feel every video, I can only talk about films because that's what I'm authorized to talk about.
People are listening for this too, so you should talk about that.
But it might apply to something else. For me, I'll keep it specific to film. So when we talk about find out what the soul of something is and make sure you build everything, your craft should sort of serve that soul. Now, what do I mean by that is, so when you have two, when you have a simple scene of two people talking, right? And you're filming it. There are two aspects to it. One is the information, one is the emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, people forget there is emotion to something. And they just film it.
Just about this conveying whatever.
Conveying.
It is, that's it, yeah.
Which is important.
Yeah.
But then it becomes 100% information. And there's no emotion to it. Hey, two people talking, I can shoot it in five different ways. Yeah. I can shoot it long, really far, really close. So people like, oh, you know what? I need to see his face a little bit. So they come slightly close where two of us can be in the frame. And then maybe they take just like this, right? So you have three cameras, you have this thing, that thing and all that. So, but then I think what people need to ask is, fine, there is a certain amount of information that I need to convey. But how do I want the people who are watching it feel about the information being presented, which is the emotion part of it.
Right.
Right. So now that guy is a bad guy, this guy is a good guy, or that, or whatever the myriad of things that the characters are. How do I, that guy, I want the audience to hate him slightly. Mm. So how do I frame this? So then comes how your craft sort of serves an emotion. Right. Mm. So that's when you start learning. If I keep the camera here, there's a certain emotion somebody feels, as opposed to coming slightly here and slightly down, slightly up, or maybe I'll go a little closer. So all this is where I constantly tell a lot of people working with us also, experiment. Shoot people in every possible angle and put together and see if somebody without dialogue, without sound, watches it and knows exactly what that guy is like, who is a bad guy, who is a good guy. I'm making it very black and white because it's easier to explain. Yeah, but usually, bad guy, good guy, or is that guy hiding something? Is that guy upfront? Is that guy nosy? Is this guy introvert, extrovert? All that can actually be done visually.
Right.
You don't need dialogue. Dialogue is there to sort of elevate it to the next level. And music, and sound effects, and color, and all that. Right? So, let's say we don't have any of this. Strip it down to five variables, black and white, camera angles, edits, okay, so things like that. Then what happens? Then how will you convey the what is actually happening between these two to somebody? Now what you need to convey, that is a soul.
Mm.
So first define the soul. Figure out what it is that what do you want the audience to feel about this particular thing that you're showing them, you know? So now you don't need to get this cerebral of about every single thing that you
do.
I mean, there are things that you don't need this much effort.
Correct.
Where if you're doing a small sketch or if you're doing a small TikTok video or a YouTube video, you don't need to put in this much effort. But it always helps to know this.
It's good to ask these questions.
It's good because it's a thing that you need to learn. You know, if you, tomorrow if you're making, because of your amazing success as making sketches, tomorrow you're getting to do a feature film, you need to know how to transform yourself into that kind of a mold. So it's always good to know what that is. So suppose if we were to shoot something very simple, we always ask ourselves that what is the soul of this thing, what is the subtext of this thing, and then we try to build craft to cater to that. It's not let's move in the camera here, light the background in this color, this thing,
all the things that come later, right?
That comes because it is informed by the soul we are trying to enhance, we are trying to show people. So it's still very hard to explain because you need to sort of be in a zone where you're actually creating emotion. That's basically what this is all about, right? When you're making a film, that's all it is about. Sometimes you don't even need information. Right. There are shots where it's just in close-ups. I don't need to know what the room is like, but you'll know what the underlying feeling is. Is somebody feeling in love? Is somebody else trying to reject them? It can be completely in close-ups. You don't need to show the room or whatever,
Yeah.
Sometimes, stripped of information, I would lean more towards emotion than information. People don't remember information.
Correct.
It just goes off like that because there's so much information.
Yeah.
But people remember emotion. How did that make me feel?
So true.
That is what people will share. That is what people will talk about. You should watch this. It was so awesome thing. That's what keeps people engaged to continue watching something.
So true.
So that even though it feels like it's too much theory and science, it's actually not. It's very heart. It's very, what can I say? It's from the gut. There's no like, if you put the camera here, you will make that person look bad. There's no rule like that at all.
Yeah.
So you need to find how you want to make that person look bad. And there are 5 different ways at least to make that person look like the villain.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Again, when I say hero villain, I'm making very black and white.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
There is that is what drives again a narrative and aesthetics, and all that is sort of dictated by that soul, what we call it.
Yeah.
I was telling you right a while back, we have a very simple way of deducting this.
Okay.
So whenever when we are making a film and we sort of presenting it to the client, even though they've given us the script or whatever, we break it down to 2 sort of elements.
Okay.
What is the most interesting thing in this? Fine. Let's define that very clearly. What is the most interesting thing? We either draw from our own experience, personal experience. And then once we define that, now what is the most interesting way to show it?
Mm-hmm.
That comes down to the craft. Oh, the most interesting thing about this is I was talking about the gem paints thing that we recently did. That the walls are really beautiful. Oh, that's the most important thing. How do we show it in the most interesting way? Let's put it in a museum where people are fighting and they break everything except the wall. So that's essentially what drives something forward. Things like that. And I think a lot of people miss that point.
Yeah,
they just put the camera.
It's not
information. I don't need to know thing. I'm watching it so that you can tell me how I should feel about it.
Correct. And it's so, I think the reason why it's ignored or it's not spoken about is because, like you said, it's so hard to put in words, right?
It is hard to put in words, and it's not easy to teach as
it.
Well.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not a thing. So
like if you were planning to follow this up with a class, an hour class of soul, and then sit down and just try it, you can't teach it.
It
comes with an instinct, right? Like you said, it's a gut feeling.
Yeah.
And it's with you like putting yourself out there, just like being part of these groups or these setups, if you will. And then you're realizing, okay, this works. I can see this. And like you said, just keep experimenting.
Right.
And that's the only way when you get that feedback, you're like, okay, I see something here.
Yeah.
And this is something I can try and recreate. So yeah, that was part 1 of my conversation with Sahith. Part 2 will be out same time next week.
If you did stick around till this long, then consider smashing the like button and also maybe dropping a comment with something that only you and people who have stuck around till this point will know in the comments down below. If you're listening to this over audio, then consider following or subscribing to our show there. And maybe just share the episode with your near and dear ones. It'll really help get the word out. Cool then, I'll be back next week with part 2 of the conversation with Sahith. Until then, ciao.